great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. I saw the craziest story about Comcast in the New York Times, the huge cable monopoly. Comcast spends now, to provide health coverage to its employees, $1.3 billion a year. I mean, that is a massive expense. But Comcast has implemented a program unlike any other employer has done, and their healthcare costs are not going up at all. Their employee out-of-pocket deductible has dropped to $250. And I think about how many employers have deductibles for employees that are in the thousands now. So here you have, and the whole idea of going to the high deductibles, and I was somebody who thought it too, is that people would be more careful when they got medical care if they knew they were paying a big chunk themselves. But what Comcast decided, and what's been amazing, is that they 5 years running have had no increase in healthcare costs. And how they've done it is not by denying employees care, but by the company itself helping people manage their own healthcare. And so every employee has something called a navigator. And that employee helps somebody shepherd through the medical system. And they have a thing for second opinions. Instead of just saying, oh, you should go seek a second opinion, they have an entire formal process to get you to the right kind of specialist for that second opinion. They also were very early in doing video calls where employees could talk with the doctor on demand. And so they've been able, instead of increasing the use of high-cost medical care, they've been able to decrease it by getting people the right care. And again, this is a one-sided story. This is a profile on what they've done to bend the healthcare cost curve. But I'd say, from my perspective, one of the big problems, I don't think employers should be involved in healthcare. I think it should be an individual thing. And I think it's an accident of American history that so many Americans get their healthcare from their employer. And so we're separated from the cost so often as an employee. But those costs that an employer bears, they can look at as compensation. And it's money you're not getting in your paycheck because they're spending all that on your health care. But most employers look at it as something that they're powerless to do anything about or they're not knowledgeable about. And what Comcast deserves credit for, and we'll see how it works over time and how really happy the Comcast employees are having the company so involved in their health care, is that they are not sending it off to somebody else, to some third party. They're actively involved in their employees' health. Obviously, they're doing it to save money. But if we don't do something about it, if we don't reduce the amount we're spending on healthcare in the United States, we create a real problem for our country's long-term financial stability. We're spending more than double of our national income than any other country, developed country, on healthcare. We're spending $1 in $5 approximately of our nation's wealth on healthcare, and we have inferior results compared to about 36 countries, including lots of third world countries, on our healthcare. So we need people to break the mold. We need people to do things completely differently than they've been done before. And on that score, Comcast gets real credit. Will is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hello, Will.
Hi, Clark. How are you?
Great, thank you. You want to help out your granddaughter. Is that true?
That's true. My granddaughter is turning 13 this Sunday.
Well, happy teenage year to her.
That's right. And she acts like it, too, believe me.
She's got full teen swagger already?
Yeah, she's had that for a while, actually.
Oh, boy.
But, no, she's a good girl.
Okay.
My question is this. You know, I was thinking about what to get her for her birthday. And instead of some electronic device or just a normal gift, I would like to get her started thinking about retirement. And in fact, because of listening to your program, we even had a conversation a few months ago about IRAs and, you know, money markets and things like that. So I'm wondering, since she's only 13, is it possible for me to open up Roth IRA in her name?
You cannot. Until she has a job, you can't do a Roth. Now, is she working at all as a babysitter or anything like that? Doing yard work, anything along those lines?
Well, she has chores at home that she doesn't do, so I would say no.
Okay, so you can't do the Roth.
Okay.
What are the odds that this 13-year-old's going to go to college?
They're very good.
Then I would suggest as an alternative that you consider taking money that you would give for stuff and instead open what's known as a 529 account you control for the benefit of your soon-to-be 13-year-old granddaughter.
Yeah, I've thought of that too.
Because you can put in from very small amounts of money to very large amounts of money for her benefit, and that money grows tax-free for the next 5 or so years, whatever it earns, and you spend it tax-free on her eligible college expenses, of which the definition is pretty broad, so you don't have much trouble being able to use the money for college tax-free. And I'd say that would be a better path right now than thinking along the lines of retirement. When she starts working, hopefully she'll have a paying job by the time she's 15 or 16. That would be when you could start contributing instead to a Roth for her, only in the amount up to what she earns in a year. But in the meantime, do the college thing for her. And Will, by the way, I have my 529 plan guide at clark.com. You can look through and see how to make a choice of putting money in for her. You look at it, and it's almost a guarantee from me that 10 minutes later, you can have the account open and funded. They're so easy to set up with whatever amount of money you want to start it with and add to it as you wish for her. Richard's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Clark? How are you?
Great, thank you. Richard, you want to talk about your mortgage. How's it going?
Yes. Well, so far so good. I'm making an extra payment a month. She tried to pay it off earlier, but I have a question on that later, too. My question is, I have a 2-year-old children that I wanted to be protected, you know. If something happens to me that the house is paid off, that I should get a what they call mortgage protection insurance on the house?
Rat alert, rat alert.
That's your money blowing to smithereens, Richard. Never, 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 not ever buy that junk mortgage insurance.
Okay.
It's trash. Let me tell you why. The banks push those things so hard because this is the craziest thing of all. Who are you insuring?
What you mean?
You're not insuring yourself. You're insuring the bank. The bank is getting you to pay a premium so that they're protected, that if something happens to you, that they're going to get paid off on that mortgage. That's number one. Okay. Number two, the premiums they charge for that trash is 10 to 20 times more expensive than you buying your own insurance policy where you would name your family as your beneficiary.
But what kind of insurance is that?
You can just buy something known as level term insurance.
Level term
insurance. It's a very, very inexpensive form of life insurance that I, you can read my briefing on it at clark.com, and you can buy it for 20 years, 30 years, 15 years. If you're thinking of buying it to cover the life of the mortgage, you can buy 30-year level term. And you said your kids are really young. How old are you, Richard?
I'm going to turn 50.
50? All right. So probably no. Buy a 20-year level term because it gets really expensive at age 50 to buy a 30-year. That would cover you at age 70. What you're really looking to cover is replacement of income in the event you can't be the breadwinner anymore because you passed away.
Exactly.
And so 20-year level term, the premiums stay the same through the 20 years. It's very, very inexpensive. Again, it'll cost you for dollar coverage, it'll cost you 1/10 to 1/20 buying that trash that the banks peddle. And the neat thing is that the beneficiary is your family, not the bank. You don't have to worry about the bank. Your survivors will decide what's best to do. If they want to keep the house, sell it, whatever they want to do, they're able to decide with the money.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Tim is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Tim, you have a friend who decided they were going to make money doing currency speculation. Is that right?
Yes. Back when Iraq collapsed, and I guess there was a bunch going on with buying the dinars and hope they would come back.
You know, when after we invaded last decade, we had to quota the number of calls we were getting from people that were overseas and had come back stateside who had gotten in this frenzy that caught on with so many military units that they were going to get rich in Iraqi dinars. And I said it over and over again that it is almost impossible to make money on a speculative war currency. And it was weird when we went back in with the surge, I guess that was in 08, I started getting those calls again about the Iraqi dinar. And then it's quieted down. And then the only calls I've had in the last few years are people who are like, hey, I got all these Iraqi dinars, what am I going to do with them? And they may not ever have any meaningful value in the marketplace. Okay. How much does your friend have tied up in, how much do they spend in U.S. dollars to buy the dinar?
About $2,000.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's serious money.
Yeah. So can you sell those dinars back and get what you put in them or not?
No chance. No chance. Really? And, you know, it is not a what's known as a convertible currency. It's not one that's freely traded on the open market. So I don't even know today how someone would take a loss on them and sell them. But I'll tell you, I'll do this, Tim. I'll see if we can find out if there is any ability to exchange dinar for a hard currency like the U.S. dollar. And if there is a way to do it, I'll do it as an update on the show. Because there are so many people who tied up money. I'll tell you, $2,000 is the highest I've heard from somebody. Most people I heard from put hundreds of dollars into Iraqi dinar, not in the thousands.
Right.
So, you know, the issue with any war currency is even if stability eventually returns, the currency in use at the time of instability is seldom the official currency moving forward once stability returns. And so that's why money that has little value is almost never in a time of war or conflict or revolution or anything like that is almost never something that ultimately regains a marketable value where you would make a profit.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Most of you listening right now are probably multitasking. Yep, while you're listening, you're probably also driving, cleaning, exercising, or maybe even grocery shopping. But if you're not some kind of moving vehicle, there's something else you can be doing right now: getting an auto quote from Progressive Insurance. It's easy, and you could save money by doing it right from your phone. Drivers who save by switching to Progressive save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Discounts for having multiple vehicles on your policy, being a homeowner, and more. So, just like your favorite podcast, Progressive will be with you 24/7, 365 days a year, so you're protected no matter what. Multitask right now. Quote your car insurance at progressive.com to join over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average, 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm going to talk about something that is freaky to me. The state of Missouri passed a law that you go to prison for a year if you call a veggie burger a veggie burger. I'm not kidding. If you call anything that has any plant base to it meat or meaty or has a taste like, what's that one that they, the one that's like bacon, tastes like bacon supposedly, but it has some kind of, not bacon, I forget what name they give it. Anyway, the state of Missouri has declared war on people eating a healthier diet and has made it a crime, that's right, a crime, for someone to refer to something that you're eating as a veggie burger, as anything to do with meat. Now, a couple of things here. This was all done to protect farmers. And I mean, come on. This is ridiculous. As someone who loves red meat more than I should, who has a diet heavy in the things that I'm, that a dietitian today would say don't do, I just think that we are not being respected enough as individuals to know that a veggie burger is not made of meat. That a product that has a weird name like, I don't know, what are some of these things called? I need Chris to hear who eats all these.
Well, like something these, you ate recently, the Impossible Burger, right?
I did eat the Impossible Burger, and we were doing a thing on a Facebook Live where I had two different meat substitute burgers, I guess you'd call them, and a real burger. And I was sure, without doubt, that I would hate the two veggie burger things because that's just not my thing. And the weird thing was that Impossible Burger, that I kept calling the Incredible Burger, but it's Impossible, right?
Yeah, it's Impossible. Yep.
Impossible. Anyway, it was so good that I ate that whole thing and I didn't eat but a little bit of the beef burger, the other veggie one I didn't like. But the thing was, I was making an informed choice in the marketplace. Let me do that. Let the marketplace speak. To fill prisons with people because they describe something as being, having a taste like bacon or being flavorful. And who's even going to decide? The wording of this is so ridiculously broad that it would be just a selective persecution of somebody saying, oh, you use the word so-and-so. And that would lead somebody to think you were talking about red meat or talking about ham from a pig or something like that, or bacon. Really? Really ridiculous. Aren't there more important things to do than to have word police?
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Here we go again on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can keep more of what you make. So here we are staring down another massive hurricane, and whether this is a coincidence or just a normal cycle of weather patterns, or it is climate change, global warming, whatever, the fact is that we are having an increasing number of violent storms of various types occurring throughout the United States. And with floods and everything else, and you may have heard me recently talk about the federal flood insurance program and why it's important for you if you live in an area not generally considered to be subject to high risk of floods, but because of development in your area or because of these intense rains that are cycling through a lot of the country, you stand at a greater risk of flooding, and that you consider flood insurance if you are in a low risk area. And that's just one of the things you do, because in life, you prepare as best you can. After we got hit by a bad storm last year and had no power for 8 days, my wife went into action and said, we're going to be prepared next time. And so we have a supply of water, of bottled water, that right now we have 5 cases. We don't normally drink bottled water, but we have it in the event that we have any kind of catastrophic storm. We have a 2-week supply of non-perishable food. We have LED flashlights. We have LED emergency lights plugged into outlets around our house. So if we lose power, those LED emergency lights burn for a long, long time without power. We have a new beefed up first aid kit. And we videotape once a year. Videotape, that's such an ancient expression. We shoot video with her smartphone once a year around her birthday. So we've got another one coming up soon, where she does a walk and talk of the house and describes what we have. And that goes into the cloud with Google Photos that provides unlimited lifetime storage. And so we have it in the event that we would have a catastrophic loss, have an insurance claim. The video evidence is so valuable at that time. If for nothing else, what you might forget you had that burned up in a fire or got destroyed in a flood or got destroyed in a storm or tornado or a hurricane like this massive one approaching the southeast coast of the United States right now, a Cat 4 right now that could be really, really ugly. Who knows exactly how Florence will play out, how much is the real deal, how much is maybe media-fed hysteria. We will see. But the thing is to be prepared. Your key papers, you can use one of the apps like FastScan and take pictures of them and store them in your own email. You could take pictures of key documents, again, and store them in Google Photos. It has a free document folder. You want to have as much access to your records as you can, as much proof as possible. And if you have to ever evacuate from a storm, like people evacuating in the Carolinas, potentially in Virginia, if you lack resources as you evacuate, you know, you can post if you're on social media and where you evacuate to, people may offer to take you in. I know in a big storm that we suffered that people found housing on Facebook that were stranded in a big storm a few years ago. And so know that there is help out there, but the first step is to help yourself. Do what you can to help yourself. And hurricanes are so unpredictable and can be so destructive, and it can also be so haphazard, where if you think about Hurricane Irma that hit so much of Florida last year, that Irma would take out a house, and then the next house may have a little damage, and the one after that looks pristine with nothing happening to it. So you just don't know. And the first thing is for you to be safe, to protect yourself physically. But these other steps procedurally are really important for you to think through. You know, when people are in an area where there's a lot of warnings from certain events like a hurricane, have a certain predictability about them, but it's an inexact science. There are people who refuse to evacuate, and they come out later and they say, hey, I was fine. I don't know what that was about. And then others, well, they can't speak for themselves. I remember being in Mississippi after Hurricane Katrina doing television coverage and going down streets where we knew they were streets. They were like sandy indents in the earth. All the homes were gone. And a lot of the people who lived in them didn't evacuate. Never a trace of them again. So these are not things to mess with. And know that wherever you live in the United States, you need to be prepared for whatever potential catastrophe Mother Nature can bring your way. And a lot of the steps I just mentioned with hurricane preparedness apply to you even when there's nothing on the horizon. Think about if you live in an area with potential earthquakes. When's the last time you documented your possessions in your home? When's the last time you created an electronic record of your key papers? What emergency supplies do you have available? Where's a flashlight? Do you have any working batteries for it? Now, I've got the flashlights that are crank flashlights. So you just have to use your own muscle power or develop muscles, you know, turning the wheel so that the flashlight gives you light. And I really like those because you don't have to worry about, oops, we got no batteries and we got no electricity, we got no light. With those hand crank flashlights, you're good. Dan is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Dan.
Hey, Clark. How are you today?
Great. Thank you, Dan. You ever lived through a rough storm?
Actually, yes. I live in the Daytona Beach area, and we had hurricanes the last two seasons. So hoping for the best this year.
And did you suffer any property damage at your home?
Just lost some trees, which was sad, but, you know, they missed the house. One big branch on a car with a little dent, but fortunately, nothing major.
Well, that's great. Well, how can I be of service to you today, Dan?
So I have a large family. Currently have four young children on my car insurance. Well, not so young. They're old enough to drive, but still on our plan. And so I've been with a major national insurance company for years from before I moved to Florida. Felt like I got treated pretty well, got discounts for having homeowners, auto, umbrella, with that company. And then since moving to Florida, they can't write policies for everything that I need here. And the auto insurance is just so much money. There's got to be a better way. So I'm exploring alternatives. If the federal government can track down my dad's Army Reserve records, I'll probably be eligible for USAA. So that's plan A. As you've mentioned many times, they're great. But if that's not an option, I'm trying to figure out what plan B might be to save some money on car insurance.
You know, you just pointed out why now more than one-third of 18-year-olds don't have a driver's license. Because the cost of auto insurance for a teenage boy is so through the roof, and teenage girls cheaper but still a fortune, that in a lot of families, people are putting off the whole idea of a teen driving because of the massive premiums. And now, truth be told, even though you're not supposed to be able to ride in an Uber or Lyft till you're, I think, 18, in a lot of places in the United States, that's how teenagers are getting around. Lyft now has monthly subscription plans in a lot of places that are a lot cheaper than the cost of auto insurance for a teenager per month. So it is a brutal burden. And I just had the good fortune of, well, I miss her, but my 19-year-old is going to college over 2,000 miles away. And my auto insurance just dropped, I think it was $420 a month because she was no longer in the area to be a driver. So, I mean, I can't imagine. What are you paying for four teenage drivers?
It's in the multiple thousands every 6 months.
Yeah. It's a burden that people can't even fathom who have adult kids now, that it was so much cheaper when their kids were teens. So all you can do is follow the path you're thinking about, which is to get quotes from as many different companies as you can. And what kind of vehicles are the teens driving? Are they driving older jalopies or newer vehicles?
Yeah, older jalopies.
So then in that case, I assume you don't have collision comprehensive?
No, just on my car, my wife's car.
So for them, it's just liability. So that makes it right. Much easier for you to comparison shop. And you just got to call around. You can go to websites. Are you a Costco member?
No, there's no Costco here where we live.
All right, because Costco, just for others I'll mention, Costco does a huge business with an insurance partner writing auto insurance policies now. Your local AAA, are you a member of AAA?
Yes.
Do you know if your local AAA shops writes auto insurance?
I have not checked. I'll look into that.
I would try that. I would try every company you can think of. And one of the easiest ways to do it is to find an independent agent. They're a vanishing breed, but they're still out there. And independent agents can quote from many different companies and maybe come up with something that would save you a lot of money for your teenagers. Claudia is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Claudia.
Hi. How are you?
Great. Thank you, Claudia. How can I serve you in saving for retirement?
Well, we actually just finished helping our older son through college, and now we have our 19-year-old is in community college. We're not sure what direction he's going to be going in. But right now, we're just trying to figure out our finances. We do have 403B plans, my husband and I. But we also have a mortgage that we still need to pay off and also a used car loan.
All right, so the car loan I'm not particularly concerned about because they pay off measured in months. Mm-hmm. You know, you're on a straight trend line to pay that off.
Okay.
So let's talk instead about the 403B plans. Generally, I'm not a fan of 403B plans because usually they have massive expenses with them. They cost, compared to a low-cost 401k plan that many people you know might have in private industry, you're paying 10 to 20 times the management expenses and potentially commissions buried in a 403B that people don't have in a good 401k.
Unfortunately, it's both of us have it through our employer.
Right. And so do either of you have a 403B that's managed by TIA, T-I-A-A?
I don't believe we do, no.
So that means odds are huge that you're in a very high-cost plan. Do either your employers offer a match on the 403B?
They do. For mine, it's 6%. And for my husband, he is not 100% sure. He's actually in the process of finding that out. He believes it's possibly 8%.
All right. So you want to participate in those 403B plans, capturing all the match money.
Mm-hmm.
And now, since you've been raising two kids, educating them and all that, you're going to have to really play catch up to get to where you want to be in retirement. So what I would do is, beyond what you're doing in the 403Bs, Mm-hmm. I would recommend each of you set up a Roth IRA.
Okay.
And are either of you 50 or older?
I'm 15. He's 57.
All right. So you're both eligible to do catch up on the Roth, where you're allowed to put extra money aside.
Okay.
And so I would only put in the 403Bs, which you can pick up the match money. Anything else you want to save for retirement, do in Roth IRAs, and do them with one of the ultra low-cost companies. I have a little investment guide cheat sheet at clark.com you can go to and see my favorites for you to set up the Roth IRAs. And that's where I'd pound money aside. It's time for Ask Clark. That's where you post a question for me at clark.com. Producer Joel, ask it for you. What Clark, you got, Joel?
Yeah, John wants to know, what are the differences between Visa and MasterCard, and which one is better?
Visa and MasterCard are tweedledee, tweedledum. I call them the Visa MasterCard cartel. They are there to serve the interests of the banks. They are not really interested in you and me. They are equivalent. Whichever card gets you the most benefit, whether if you don't pay your balance in full, one that has the lowest interest rate, if you're into rewards, that you get the greatest rewards. But whether it's a Visa or MasterCard is not really important. And when you travel overseas, both are very widely accepted if you ever do travel overseas. So it's only a matter of the features and benefits. As an example, if you travel overseas, again, not mattering whether it's a Visa or MasterCard, only that you don't pay foreign currency junk fees when you use the card overseas. But other than that, they are tweedledee, tweedledum.
All right, Clark. And Jeffrey wrote in, and he says, I just received a phone call from my wireless phone company. Someone was trying to use my identity to open an account and purchase several phones. The phone company contacted me to verify if I was opening a new account. I have my credit frozen. Is it still possible for someone to use my identity to do that?
Yes. Believe it or not, Equifax uses a separate database that they sell to the cell phone industry. And instead of using the traditional Equifax credit report that would already be frozen, the additional credit file for cell phone providers is one that stays unfrozen unless you freeze it too. So we have the information for you on my credit freeze guide at clark.com, what you do to freeze your cell phone service to prevent someone from stealing it also. And remember, Equifax has never suffered any sanctions, punishment, anything of any meaning after their reckless and negligent behavior led to the information of 2/3 of American adults being out there for criminals to exploit for the rest of our lives. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks so much for listening today. You know, there's a giant team behind bringing you everything we do at Team Clark. Our podcast and radio show are produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. My TV producer is Leah Dunn. Clark.com is made possible thanks to Krista DiBiase, James DeGal, John Kress, Theo Timu, Michael Timmerman, Craig Johnson, Beth Marcinko, Clara Bosnetto, John Jones, and Grace Del Rio. ClarkDeals.com, where you can find the best deals from around the web, is produced by Karis Brown, Laura Sayers, Sarah Jordan, and Damon Marley. You can sign up for our newsletters at Clark.com thanks to Sally McDonald, and our social media gurus are Chelsea Glass and Nicole Carroll. Our off-air advice center is run by Lori Silverman, Sarah Mobley, and Sue Gatliff, and their team's available to serve you over 40 hours each week at 404-892-8227. And this is a free service of Team Clark. Thanks for listening. Till next time.